Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to Iris today. This is the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, November 29th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's take a look at the weather forecast first thing, this coming from KCRG. Rain or snow chance returns as soon as Friday after a couple of warmer days. Temperatures will be above freezing at times in the next day or two, but we may get another dose of some wintry weather soon after that. Things start off chilly this morning, but not quite the same bitter cold as we experienced 24 hours ago. Instead, wind chills in the upper single digits to upper tens can be expected as you head out to work and school today. A warm front is moving through the region this morning, which will help pull in a slightly warmer air mass with it. With full sunshine for a good portion of the day, this will push temperatures back into the upper 30s to mid-40s around the area. Expect a reduction in our snow cover as a result. As temperatures fall below freezing this evening and tonight, keep an eye out for a few slick spots, as some snowmelt could refreeze. This would be especially an issue for untreated paved surfaces. If it looks wet tomorrow morning, it's likely ice, and you should use caution while walking or driving. Thursday should follow a fairly similar path as today, with temperatures starting off in the 20s and reaching the upper 30s to low 40s. Skies will likely be a bit cloudier, though, as our next storm system approaches from the southwest. We'll see clouds continue to increase throughout the night on Thursday night, with the first signs of some precipitation arriving near daybreak on Friday. This will be in the form of rain or snow mix, which could be a factor in your morning commute. The most likely area to see this round of precipitation would be the farther south you go, perhaps south of U.S. Highway 20, as a general guideline. While amounts will likely be light during this time, we know it doesn't take a lot to cause some slick areas. Be prepared for some possible issues on Friday morning. A second disturbance gives another shot at some rain or snow by Friday evening and night, with the balance favoring snow just a little bit in this window. Again, amounts still look like they'll be on the lighter end, but the chance for a little bit of accumulation is higher here due to the more favorable time of day and temperature set up. Plans for travel late Friday night or early Saturday could face some slick roadways during this time, too. Both of these quick-moving disturbances bear some attention. Saturday looks like it should be fairly quiet and dry, but additional light rain or snow could make a return by Saturday night into Sunday. Again, widespread heavy precipitation looks unlikely, but the chance for wintry conditions is there to finish out the weekend. Beyond this relatively active weather period, conditions should turn a bit quieter for a little while to follow. Temperatures next week will be in the mid to upper 20s for lows and upper 30s to 40s for highs for much of it, along with at least partial sunshine during the day. Some signs of warm-up are there for later in the week, with temperatures returning to the upper 40s at the tail end of our 9-day forecast. Now, on the front page of the Courier, we have an article titled, Iowa Farmers Begin Looking to Next Year as Harvest Wraps Up. Dateline Des Moines. A relatively dry week, with snow falling at the weekend, resulted in 6.1 days suitable for field work during the week ending Sunday, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Field work activities started to slow down this week, with reports of fertilizer and manure application wrapping up. Quote, with this year's strong harvest nearly complete and the snow beginning to fly, Iowa farmers are looking ahead to next year by considering input choices, conservation practices, and marketing decisions, said Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nagg. Quote, following three consecutive La Nina winters, this winter is expected to be impacted by a moderate to strong El Nino, which typically means warmer temperatures and more variability in precipitation. As we head into the 2024 growing season, replenishing soil moisture will be of utmost importance, unquote. Corn harvested for grain is virtually complete, with farmers in the southern part of the state still running a few combines, 9 days ahead of the 5-year average. Cattle grazing on stock fields continued this week, while no reports were received regarding livestock conditions. Unseasonably warm temperatures early in the reporting period were balanced out by a late-week cold snap that brought measurable snow across most of Iowa, according to Justin Glisson, state climatologist with the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. Overall temperatures were generally near normal, with the statewide average coming in at 31.9 degrees, or 0.6 degrees below normal. Drive-through light displays benefit House of Hope, Blackhawk County Conservation. Story written by Melody Parker. Even the Grinch would find something to smile about on a drive-through dazzling community holiday light displays. Many metro area neighborhoods will be getting their shine, while the night sky will sparkle as large public displays flip the switch on a light-filled Christmas season. On Friday, House of Hope Festival of Lights and Hickory Hills Holiday Light Show will light the nights for the coming weeks. So fill a hot chocolate mug and climb into the old four-wheel sleigh for a leisurely drive through the magical glow of twinkling lights. This year's House of Hope Festival of Lights takes place at Lost Island KOA Resort at 4550 LaPorte Road in Waterloo. Hours are 6 to 8 p.m. on December 1st through the 3rd, 8th through the 10th, and 15th through the 17th. On Fridays and Saturdays, the festival is a drive-through, while on Sundays, visitors will park their vehicles for a walk-through-only experience. This is the third annual event, said Development Director Dusky Steele. Quote, "We're back and bigger. We started the light show in 2022 because we had to figure out a creative way to do fundraising during the pandemic," she said. "The reaction was so awesome, we decided to keep it. Cost is $20 per vehicle, quote, no matter how many people you squeeze into the car," Steele said. "Admission can be paid at the entrance, or tickets may be purchased online in advance. Proceeds fund House of Hope efforts to provide single mothers and women aging out of foster care with housing, as well as holistic programming, access to services, and resources to achieve independence and permanent homes. The organization receives no state or federal aid. While driving through the displays, families can enjoy complimentary hot chocolate and cookies, as well as watch for Santa Claus. The walkthrough experience on Sunday will be more interactive, with Christmas carols, s'mores station, and an opportunity to talk to Santa. Along the way, visitors can vote for their favorite display. Last year, Waterloo Fire Rescue won the display, featuring a fire truck and Grinch theme. About 2,000 vehicles toured the light show in 2022, Steele said. The partnership with Lost Island KOA Resort has been amazing, she noted, providing electrical hookups for the 30 businesses, organizations, and churches setting up light displays this year. Quote, "We are so grateful to all our sponsors for their support." For the fourth year, drivers will be lining up to drive through the Hickory Hills light show at 3338 Hickory Hill Road in LaPorte City. The show will operate only on Friday and Saturday nights through December 23rd. Drivers can roll through the campground from 6 to 9 p.m. on December 1st and 2nd, 8th and 9th, 15th and 16th, and 22nd and 23rd. Cost is $10 per vehicle, cash or check only, and no pre-registration is required. Quote, "The event is a fundraiser for Blackhawk Conservation," said Cherry Northrup, BHCC Planning Administrator. Quote, "Proceeds help offset the costs of operating the county parks, and environmental education programming. Of all the county's parks, Hickory Hills makes the most sense for the light display, Northrop explained. We're away from city lights, so there's no light infiltration. When you drive through the campgrounds, our holiday lights are extra vivid. It's a truly pretty display. Last year, nearly 2,500 vehicles took the drive. This year's setting will be illuminated by thousands of lights from 32 displays, including whimsical themes and favorite holiday and Disney characters. Quote, there's no particular theme. We have businesses and organizations who come up with their own ideas and create their own displays. Participants began setting up in the park on November 5th. Displays will include a Mickey Mouse Christmas, a dental office's riff on the novelty song, All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth, tributes to Jimmy Buffett, and National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation movie, and a lighted nativity scene. It's free for businesses and organizations to participate, although there are $500 sponsorships that provide funds to purchase additional lights and displays that park staff will use to fill any extra spaces. When visitors enter the park, they can tune to a specific radio station to hear their Christmas music as they drive, Northrop added. Anyone interested in decorating a sign or sponsorships can contact Northrop at cnorthrop@blackhawkcounty.iowa.gov. No one injured after explosion at Shell Rock ethanol plant. Dateline Shell Rock. No one was hurt after an explosion at a bioethanol plant sent a fireball into the sky this weekend. Multiple emergency agencies from Butler and Bremer counties responded to Poet Bioprocessing in Shell Rock on Saturday after the boom. Chris Showalter, the coordinator for Butler County Emergency Management, said the call came in around 4 p.m., and by the time fire crews arrived, the fire took care of itself. He said firefighters didn't see open flames in the structure, but went inside to hose down any potential hotspots. Crews were on scene for less than 2 hours. Showalter said people were working at the plant when the blast happened, but he didn't know how close the employees were to the facility when the explosion occurred. The cause hasn't been determined, but the initial thought is that somehow combustible dust exploded. Showalter said Poet will begin an investigation as early as Monday and that the plant is still operational. Cedar Falls family donates $250,000 for UNI's Campanelle renovation. Dateline Cedar Falls. The University of Northern Iowa has announced another donation to its Our Tomorrow campaign. Jen and Scott Bittner of Cedar Falls have pledged a $250,000 leadership gift to support the renovation of the Campanelle, an iconic structure that has stood at the center of the UNI's campus for nearly a century. The Bittners say their gift honors the impact the university has on the community while preserving the UNI experience for future students. The Bittners are retired owners of Cedar Falls-based Hawkeye Corrugated Box Company and have been longtime supporters of the university. Jan was the assistant coach for UNI's volleyball team from 1982 to 1997. In 2017, the couple received the distinction of honorary alumni. Scott, a past president of the Cedar Falls Chamber of Commerce, said the university plays a critical role in driving the economic vitality of the region. Jan likened the reach of the Campanelle's music to the impact of the university on the broader Cedar Valley and state of Iowa. Quote, the Campanelle is a special symbol of the bond that unites the university and the larger community, Jan said in a news release. The Campanelle's sound doesn't stop at the borders of campus. The music spreads throughout the community and is a special part of what makes Cedar Falls the college town that it is. The Campanelle's renovation is a project of the university's Our Tomorrow campaign. To date, alumni and friends have given $1.7 million toward a $2.2 million goal to support a two-phase renovation of the Campanile. Phase one of the project was completed with the restoration of the carillon, the instrument contained within the belfry of the tower. Phase two of the project centers on renovating the Campanile Plaza to create an environment for the community and campus to gather. The UNI Foundation said the goal is to complete fundraising for the project in time to begin the plaza renovations in the summer of 2024. The university plans to celebrate both its sesquicentennial and the 100-year anniversary of the Campanile in 2026. Now, let's turn to the sports page. In high school wrestling, Magena makes East High debut, aims for fourth title. Dateline Waterloo. Maximus Magena swapped his Columbus Catholic greens for Waterloo East's orange and white, and he's brought his winning ways with him in the move across town. The three-time state champion didn't miss a beat in his Monday night debut as a Trojan during the Metro Quad, where he won with back-to-back pins in the first round against Cedar Falls and Waterloo West, helping his East teammates sweep the tournament. Quote, "I'm just glad to be here," Magena said. "I couldn't ask for a better team. All of these guys have been putting in a lot of work. I'm right there with them. They're all getting better together. It feels great," unquote. Magena has already proven himself as the most successful varsity wrestler in Sailor history. He spent the last 3 years dominating 1A wrestling in Iowa at the 170-pound class and has signed with North Dakota State. Magena arguably faces a harder road in his senior year, bumping up to Class 3A and facing strong competition in the Iowa Alliance Conference. In pursuit of becoming the 33rd four-time state champion in Iowa history, he's been hitting the weight room more than ever and putting more work in at the wrestling room to get his technique down. The offseason gave Magena ample time to get acquainted with Chris Timms, his new head coach. According to Magena, Timms has pushed him and his teammates to new limits. Quote, "Being part of this at East High, the room, the atmosphere, really gets the blood moving," Magena said. "I mean, Timms worked us to death, I love to say, but he really pushes us, and he really shows me where my skill level can go, and levels I can reach, and the levels I can push myself. Turn me into David Goggins, you know." For his part, Timms appreciates the work Magena's put in and its impact it's having on the Trojans. Beyond the likely six pins he'll bring to any duel, Timms said he's injected his competitive mindset and winning track record into the East High culture. It gives the other guys on the team someone to look up to for motivation, and Magena has slipped into the leadership role with ease. Quote, "He's definitely an asset. It really is an amazing thing to have, where you just have someone who's been where a lot of the guys want to be, and they just follow the blueprint. So it's nice to have Max as an example, as a leader," Tim said. Meanwhile, Magena said he's undeterred by the new competition. He's wrestled opponents from all classes and across the country. Instead, he's eager to prove all the haters and doubters wrong for once and for all, as well as put some bizarre rumors to bed. Quote, "I see people complaining about my age all the time, saying I'm 24-year-old with kids," Magena laughed. Quote, "I mean, I find it hilarious. I think it's funny, but some people are actually serious and really think I'm 24. I'm 18. I'll show you the proof," unquote. Metro meet results. Cedar Falls, 68. Columbus Catholic, 12. Waterloo East, 44. Cedar Falls, 36. Cedar Falls, 58. Waterloo West 18, Waterloo East 65, Columbus Junction 12, Waterloo East 41, Waterloo West 31, Waterloo West 54, and Columbus Catholic 15. New AD needs to free up both of Farley's hands, invest in football program. Story was written by Ethan Petrick, Dateline Cedar Falls. Mark Farley did not take kindly to a question about whether his team played tight in a de facto playoff game last Saturday against number 9, North Dakota State. Quote, "They were playing hard," Farley said. "They ain't frickin' playing tight," unquote. To the Northern Iowa head coach, in his 23rd year at the helm, the Panthers spent the entire season playing with, quote, "one hand behind their backs," unquote. Farley expanded on his comment, explaining that a lack of depth hamstrung the Panthers as injuries on both sides of the ball continued to pile on week after week. Depth and its importance continued to be his top takeaway from the season on Monday as he addressed the media for the final time in the 2023 season. Quote, "Depth is everything," Farley said. "Depth was the one thing that has really changed or been altered here in the past 3 years, and a lot has to do with compilation between NIL, COVID, all those things kind of came at one time. You put all those things together, and it has affected depth," unquote. The effects of a lack of depth, a season spent playing with one hand behind their backs, boiled over on Saturday as the Panthers fell to North Dakota State 48-27. The loss ended the 125th season of UNI football, eliminating the Panthers from playoff contention as the FCF playoff selection show came and went the following Sunday without a mention of UNI. It marked the first time the Panthers missed the playoffs in back-to-back seasons since 2012 and 13, and only the second such instance since Farley took over the program in 2001. The loss also ended the final season UNI would spend before taking on an inauspicious title from Western Illinois as the Leathernecks wrapped up their final season playing in the Missouri Valley Football Conference on Saturday. With the departure of Western Illinois to the Ohio Valley Conference, the Panthers take over as the MVFC program, which spends the least on its football program. According to the Knight Newhouse College Athletics Database, only Western Illinois spent less on its football team than UNI in 2022 among MVFC members. UNI was also one of the first five programs in the league that lagged behind the median FCF football spending in 2022. It was the third season in a row in which the Panthers failed to beat the median when prior to 2017, they never failed to surpass it. When presented with this information on Monday and asked how he intends to approach that uphill battle, Farley noted he already turned his attention to the financial aspect of next season. Quote, "My approach is to get that football ready to be playoff football team," Farley said. "Just like anything, I know exactly the process here. I have to do a great job in the financial aspect of it as much as I do on the football field and the schematics of it. That is like anything. To me, that is roster management as much as economic management through this whole process. When you get to the internal budgets of what drives the program year to year, those are things I have to manage to create the best football team to be a playoff football team. What does it take to create a playoff football team?" Farley offered that insight on Saturday during the immediate aftermath of the loss to the Bison. Quote, "Everybody has to be behind the program from top to bottom to get the depth, to get the talent, to get everything you need to play in this league," Farley said. "You can play in other leagues, but you cannot play in this league. You look at the teams that will be in the playoffs tomorrow and the top 10 format. I just know that there are ways to win this, but it takes a complete package to win it all, to get to the playoff, unquote. It's hard not to see the parallels between Farley's comments on the players playing with one hand behind their back due to the depth issues and Farley's own dilemma of building a playoff-caliber program with one hand behind his back. Six MVFC teams qualified for the 2023 FCS playoff field. Four exceeded the FCS median: North Dakota State, North Dakota, South Dakota State, and South Dakota. And the final two, Southern Illinois and Youngstown State, were within less than $100,000 of the median in 2022. In addition to spending less, UNI trailed all six playoff programs in total revenue in 2022. Across the board, UNI's total revenue has seen a sharp regression toward the median nationally. With now former athletic director David Harris departed for the same position at Tulane, a position vacated by former UNI athletic director Troy Denon, the entire athletic department at UNI finds itself at an inflection point. Whoever takes over as the new UNI athletic director should look to reverse UNI's negatively trending revenue. Number 3 Wartburg crushes Whitworth and advances to Division III quarterfinals. Donald Promnitz wrote this story. Dateline Waverly. It will be another week together. Third-ranked Wartburg College doesn't have time to reflect back on the past, and a whole lot of its focus isn't on the future either. If the Knights grant themselves one indulgence, it is they will always look forward to getting to practice together again on Tuesday. Niall McLaughlin completed 25 of 31 passes for 352 yards and 4 touchdowns as Wartburg walloped 18th-ranked Whitworth University Saturday 42-20 at Walston Hoover Stadium. The victory advances the Knights 12-0 to the Division III quarterfinals as they will host Wisconsin Whitewater next Saturday with a semifinal berth on the line. But head coach Chris Winter and his squad weren't interested in talking about next Saturday. Quote, "What a day. What a day for Wartburg football," Winter said. "I'm very proud of these guys, and again right now, we're competing to have another week together, and we get to do that. So that's probably the best part of all of this, is I know we get to show up on Tuesday and have practice with these guys and the rest of our group, and that's exciting," unquote. Wartburg led 28-6 at halftime and 42-6 in the third quarter before the Pirates, 10-1, scored a pair of fourth-quarter touchdowns against the Knights' second-team defense. Wartburg held Whitworth to just 7 yards rushing in 14 carries, while most of Pirate quarterback Austin Ewing's 287 passing yards came late. Quote, "I'd say our guys were just making plays, getting open on good routes. Just have to give them credit for making plays," McLaughlin said. "I had the easy job. I just have to get the ball to them. They have to do the work to get it open. So it's all them," unquote. Now comes on perennial power Whitewater. The Warhawks rallied past Wheaton College 49-42 on Saturday. The Knights, to man, said the only thing they're looking forward to, however, was for another week of practice together. Quote, "Anytime you make the quarterfinals, that is a good season. But we don't have time to reflect on that quite yet. There's a banquet at the end of the year for a reason," said senior defensive tackle Jordan Downing. And now, listeners, we want to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, November 29th on IRIS, that's IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and the Print Handicapped. Now this announcement.
Imagine someone hiding a gambling problem. How exhausting it must be, seeing the losses pile up and feeling powerless to control it. Now imagine it's someone you love, your spouse, your child, your friend. Talk to them to understand where they're coming from. Because anyone can have a gambling problem. They just need help getting their life back. Call 1-800-BETS-OFF to get help for them and you.
Now, let's turn to the opinion section. Our first editorial is a guest essay titled, Why We Should Bring Back the Buffalo, and it was written by Dayton Duncan. In 1805, when the Lewis and Clark expedition reached the border of what is now North Dakota and Montana, they found herds of American buffalo so numerous, quote, the whole face of the country was covered by them, Meriwether Lewis wrote. Less than a century later, in 1889, the nation's most majestic animal, whose scientific name is Bison Bison, had been reduced from practically uncountable numbers to an easily countable 541, and the species teetered on the edge of extinction. The story of what happened to the buffalo was a triple tragedy for the animals, who were mercilessly slaughtered by the millions to feed an insatiable industrial demand for their hides, for the vitality of the Great Plains ecosystem that depended on them, and perhaps most profoundly for native people, who were simultaneously dispossessed of their homelands, confined to reservations, and deprived of the animals that had fed their bodies and nourished their spirits for untold generations. But that heartbreaking tale has another chapter, too, that shows how Americans can change direction and pull back from the brink. In the early 1900s, a diverse and unlikely collection of individuals set about preserving small herds of bison in an effort that finally coalesced into a national movement that saved the species from oblivion. Today, more than 350,000 bison can be found in the United States, a notable success, but really just a start. More is still needed to correct one of the most grievous mistakes of our nation's past. Most of today's bison are being raised as livestock, confined like cattle, fattened in feedlots, and trucked to commercial slaughterhouses. Only 20,000 of them are protected in federal and state preserves in what are called conservation herds. Meanwhile, some ranchers and nonprofit environmental organizations are trying to provide buffalo with something closer to the habitats they once knew, more room to roam, and native grasses to eat. Under those conditions, the bison can reclaim their former role as the keystone species of the prairies, improving conditions for all other species to thrive. Native tribes, whose lives had been physically and spiritually intertwined with the buffalo for more than 10,000 years, before their sacred connection was so abruptly severed more than a century ago, are doing the most significant restoration work. The Intertribal Buffalo Council, whose membership now includes 83 tribes in 23 states, has already returned approximately 20,000 buffalo to their ancestral homelands. If anyone doubts that the trajectory is now pointing in the right direction, consider this. 150 years ago, during the hide hunters' final frenzy of annihilation, Columbus Delano, who was then the Secretary of the Interior, proclaimed that the buffalo's eradication would be a good thing for the nation principally, quote, in its effect on the Indians. Now the bison has been officially designated our national mammal, and the department's top official, Deb Haaland, is a Native American with ambitious plans to restore larger herds on more reservations. Her $25 million initiative will also support projects that combine bison restoration with grassland restoration, making large swaths of the prairie healthier and helping them store more carbon to combat climate change. Other federal agencies, like the Forest Service and the Department of Agriculture, are also supporting the revival. All of this is good news at a time when it's hard to find. But these exciting initiatives risk losing momentum without the infusion of public and private philanthropic investment that can dramatically increase the scale of what's been started. At a larger scale, these combined efforts can be a much-needed redemptive act of healing for the grassland ecology, for indigenous food security and cultural preservation, and for the nation at large. It will show that, quote, the American buffalo, the biography of the animals that Ken Burns and I have recounted in a PBS documentary and in a book, is actually a story that is still being written. It is crucial but unfinished business. As the environmental historian Dan Flores told us, quote, you don't get a lot of chances to correct history's mistakes. You get a few, and when you get them, you damn sure better take advantage of them. I think we've got an opportunity to do this with buffalo. And if we do, I think America can look back on its history and say, we got wise. For Gerald Baker, a Mandan Hidatsa from North Dakota, the buffalo is a symbol of our existence and the symbol of our difficulties, but it can become a symbol of so much more. Quote, when you look at a buffalo, you don't just see a big, shaggy beast standing there, he said. You see life. You see existence. You see hope. You see prayer. And you see the future for our young, the future for those not yet born. And if we give the buffalo a chance, like I think we should, it will strengthen us not only as human beings, but as Americans. This new chapter in our nation's complicated and sometimes tortured history is poised to move beyond the restoration of a shaggy but majestic animal. If given a chance, the buffalo can lead us toward a long-delayed reconciliation with the first people who inhabited the bounteous land we all now call home, and into a future every American can be proud of. And here is a note about the author of this piece. Dayton Duncan is the writer of the Ken Burns documentary, The American Buffalo, and an author with Mr. Burns of Blood Memory, The Tragic Decline and Improbable Resurrection of the American Buffalo. Next, we have an editorial written by Paul Krugman of the New York Times, titled New Perspectives on the Feel-Bad Economy. Almost 2 years have passed since I began trying to draw people's attention to the widening gap between economic perceptions and economic reality. At the time, the economic picture was mixed, with rapid job growth yet also rising inflation. Even given that mixed picture, consumer sentiment seemed abnormally low. I think it's fair to say that I encountered a lot of pushback. Inflation was, after all, rising, and many economists warned that getting it back down would require a punishing recession. But it didn't. Unemployment is still near 50-year low, yet inflation has been falling fast. Consumer prices didn't rise at all in October, although that was partly statistical noise. Many economists who crunched the data are almost giddy with how well things are going. The latest big report from Goldman Sachs is titled, quote, The Hard Part is Over. Yet surveys of consumer sentiment and political polls continued to show that Americans have a very negative view of the Biden economy. There's still no consensus about the reasons for this disconnect. But there are some new studies that shed some light on what's going on, and I have a new way of looking at the numbers that may also clarify things. Let me start with a picture from Briefing Book, a blog written by former government employees. They have put together a model that lays out the historical relationship between fundamentals like inflation and unemployment on the one side and consumer sentiment on the other. Until the pandemic, models like this worked pretty well. But at this point, consumers appear to be far more pessimistic than the model predicts they should be. I'll come back to their explanation of the gap. First, however, never mind aggregate economic statistics. What's happening to workers? For a while, many pundits were insisting that whatever might be happening to GDP, the fact was that wages weren't keeping up with inflation, which was true for a while, but not anymore. I already more or less knew this from work by Amherst's Aaron Duby, but a new comprehensive analysis by Joseph Politano really drives the point home. By any measure, real wages now are higher than they were before the pandemic. For non-supervisory workers, who make up a majority of the workforce, they're higher than you would have predicted from the pre-pandemic trend. But never mind these numbers. Americans say that things are bad. Shouldn't we take them at their word? One answer is, look at what they do, not what they say. As it happens, the plunge in consumer sentiment during the Biden years has been similar in magnitude to the plunge during and after the 2008 financial crisis, which is itself a remarkable observation, given that the post-2008 slump dragged on for years, while after COVID, we rapidly returned to full employment. However, consumer spending, which stalled during the last crisis, has just kept powering along this time. So consumers may say that it's a lousy economy, but their spending suggests they're feeling quite good about their personal financial situations. I guess they believe bad things are happening, but to other people. Anyway, the analysts at Briefing Book delved into one possible reason for this disconnect, which I speculated about right from the start. But they've done the math. It's now a well-established fact that partisan orientation affects expressed views about the economy. Democrats are more positive when a Democrat holds the White House. Republicans are more positive when the president is a Republican. What Briefing Book shows is that this effect isn't symmetric. It applies to both parties, but the partisan effect on sentiment is 2.5 times as large for Republicans as it is for Democrats. And it estimates that this asymmetric amplification, all by itself, accounts for 30% of the gap between economic sentiment and economic fundamentals. Wait, there's more. The importance of partisanship in shaping economic perceptions tells us that a lot of what people say about the economy reflects what they hear, either from news organizations or on social media, rather than their own experiences. And it's a running joke among economists I talk to that even mainstream news organizations apparently find it hard to say nice things about the Biden economy. When, say, a new employment report comes in, the headlines don't usually say things like, job growth comes in above expectations. They're more likely along the lines of, rapid job growth may slow soon, experts say, posing problems for Biden, unquote. You might say that such things can't really matter, that people know what's really happening. But the evidence on partisanship and perceptions suggests otherwise. Now, I'm not saying that this is the whole story. Inflation may be slowing, but prices have risen a lot in recent years, and that still upsets people. Although, as I noted last week, that anger didn't seem to last after previous temporary bursts of inflation. And general malaise over the social impacts of the pandemic may be bleeding into what people say about the economy. Still, we can acknowledge that there are other factors at work without denying two clear facts about the economy. Most Americans are, in fact, better off than they were in the past, and a significant part of negative economic commentary reflects partisanship, not reality. Oh, and one other point. Negative economic sentiment may not matter as much for the 2024 election as many think, since a lot of it is coming from people who would never vote for a Democrat under any conditions. Now, this editorial was written by Peter Coy, What am I thankful for this year? Amazing scientific discoveries. I'll wager that the event of 2023 that will change our lives the most in coming years is not the sighting of a Chinese spy balloon, the failure of Silicon Valley Bank, the fall of Kevin McCarthy's speakership, or any of the other eruptions that transfixed us this year. More likely, the event that's judged most transformative will be some scientific or technological advance that only a handful of people know about right now. Because that's how things almost always go. The first time the word transistor appeared in print was in an article in the New York Times in 1948, on page 46, following a report on two new radio shows, Mr. Tut and Our Miss Brooks. I think we can agree that the transistor has had more impact on our daily lives in the 75 years since than any of those bits of entertainment. The ups and downs of the business cycle that I usually write about are important. Elections matter. Wars matter. But over the sweep of history, it's been the advance of science and technology that has changed our lives the most, and mostly for the better. That's what I'm thankful for this Thanksgiving. So here's to the domestication of animals, such as turkeys, the harnessing of fire for cooking turkeys, and the invention of the wheel, or rather wheels, upon which to grandmother's house we go. Not to mention COVID vaccines, without which grandmother wouldn't let us through the front door. This holiday weekend, I'm taking a break from the usual economics fair to celebrate some of the past year's scientific and technological advances, partly because they're important, and partly because they're just so cool. Here's one. Artificial intelligence is battling the scourge of multi-drug-resistant bacteria. In May, scientists from McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario, and elsewhere, reported in the journal Nature Chemical Biology that they had used machine learning to come up with a compound against Acinetobacter baumannii, which can inflict people with catheters or on ventilators in hospitals. The scientists tested around 7,500 molecules for their effectiveness against it, then poured the data into a neural network that looked for commonalities among the effective ones, then used the resulting model on 6,680 molecules it hadn't been exposed to before. The one that was the most potent against A. baumannii had originally been explored as a treatment for kidney damage from diabetes. Artificial intelligence has its scary aspects, but in this case, it's doing something unquestionably good. While we're on medicine, University of Minnesota researchers reported this year that they had managed to preserve rat kidneys for 100 days at ultra-low temperatures, rewarm them, and successfully transplant them into other rats. That's fantastic news for rats, but also for people with failing kidneys. The researchers infused the kidneys with protective fluids and iron oxide nanoparticles, and then rapidly cooled them without forming ice crystals. The main advance was rewarming them from within, rapidly and uniformly, by placing them in an alternating magnetic field that caused the nanoparticles to oscillate and generate heat. As Science and Scientific American explained, the researchers hope to start trials on human-scale organs. A little over a year ago, researchers from China and Japan reported that they had devised a better way to produce ammonia, which is heavily used in fertilizer production and will likely be an important energy carrier in the hydrogen-based economy of the future. Synthesizing ammonia the standard way, using iron-based catalysts at high temperature and pressure, in a process known as Haber-Bosch, uses a lot of energy and generates a lot of greenhouse gases. Ruthenium, a relative of platinum, catalyzes the synthesis without that high pressure and temperature, but it's an expensive metal. To lower the cost, researchers have tried using catalysts consisting of metals such as nickel or cobalt on a support of lanthanum nitride. But the lanthanum nitride is easily broken down by moisture. The scientists added aluminum atoms to the lanthanum nitride, which chemically stabilized it. These are just examples, of course, and maybe not even the best ones. I've gone into a bit of detail on them to convey the researchers' cleverness. Nature reveals her secrets grudgingly. The people at the leading edge of science and technology who discovered those secrets are the best of the best. These three discoveries alone could make our lives materially better. Fewer hospital-acquired infections, more kidneys available for transplantation, fewer greenhouse gases. There's also knowledge for the sake of knowledge. As the newsletter Laboratory Equipment reports in its own year-end review, an international team of scientists used NASA's James Webb Space Telescope, quote, to detect a new carbon compound in space for the first time. The compound, methylcation, which was detected, quote, in a young star system in the Orion Nebula, is a precursor to carbon-based molecules that are, quote, the foundation of life as we know it, as NASA posted dramatically. We won't be checking out those methylcation molecules firsthand because it would take around 1,350 years to get to them, even traveling at the speed of light. But it's good to know that they're there, just as it's good to know that, as Science Daily wrote recently, quote, 10 newly discovered species of trilobites hidden for 490 million years in a little studied part of Thailand could be the missing pieces in an intricate puzzle of ancient world geography. The trilobites, by the way, breathed through their legs. Science and technology. So great, so worthy of our thanks. Now let's return to local news from the Courier. Second person arrested in staged Family Dollar store robbery. The story filed by Jeff Reinitz. Dateline Waterloo. A second person has been arrested in connection with a staged robbery at Waterloo Discount Store in 2022. Police arrested Marquez Alexander Fox, 27, of Waterloo, on November 22nd, on account of second-degree theft. Bond was set at $10,000. Authorities allege Fox's girlfriend, Michaela Lee Bush, worked at Family Dollar, 2206 Kimball Avenue. Bush didn't like working at the store and planned to quit her job, according to court records. As part of the plan, Bush and Fox decided to fake a holdup to steal the store's money. Fox entered Family Dollar around 9:45 a.m. on December 30th, 2022, wearing a mask and coat while Bush was working. He handed Bush an alleged robbery note and collected $3,660 in cash, police said. He then got a ride back to Bush's home, where they later split the proceeds. The robbery note he passed read, quote, I love you, court records state. Bush, 25, of Cedar Falls, was arrested for second-degree theft in June in connection with a bogus heist. Her trial is tentatively set for January. Waterloo Youth City Council wins regional Emmy for mental health PSA. Story filed by Angela Sturm McLaughlin. Dateline Waterloo. Since its inception 5 years ago, the Waterloo Youth City Council has had success advocating for teen mental health issues. Statewide recognition led to an opportunity to create a series of public service announcements in partnership with NRG Media, the Waterloo Career Center, and KWWL-TV. They aired on radio and television during the spring and summer. Now the group's efforts have been further validated with a Regional Emmy Award. Regional Emmys differ from the national awards, but are also given out by the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. Iowa is in the Upper Midwest region, one of 19 across the U.S. The Upper Midwest Emmy Awards ceremony, where the students win over two other nominees, was announced. That happened on October 14th in Bloomington, Minnesota. Quote, "When we sat down with the kids to work on the scripts for the PSAs, there were two points they wanted to make sure people knew about," said Mike Waters from NRG Media, which owns radio stations in the Waterloo and Cedar Rapids markets. Quote, "First, were how many teens were affected by mental health issues. Second, they wanted to make sure teens had a way to get in touch with mental health services." Members of the Youth Council worked with KWWL to create the concept and television spots, and with the Career Center to produce the PSAs. Digital media instructor Matt Dunkerton explained how the Career Center was able to help the Youth Council and advisor Carol Luce with the project. Quote, "I think this was a wonderful experience for all who got to participate in it. I was presently surprised to learn about the award the project received," he said in an email. Quote, "I loved Carol's determination, drive, and focus as she guided students to create something they believed would impact and benefit our community and beyond." And now, listeners, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, November 29th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Remember, you can access a recording of this reading of the Courier or of the other newspapers around the state that we record. Just go to our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.